Welcome to the Beginning and Ending Relationships in the Rooms workshop of Wagner 34. Again, my name is Nellie, and what I have asked for Charles D. from L.A. to do is to read Who is an Addict?
My name is Charles, and I'm definitely an addict. And who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs. And in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grips of a continuous and progressive illness whose ends are always the same. Jails, institutions, and death. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. Thanks, Charles. Next, I have asked Sylvia S. from North Carolina to read Why Are We Here?
I'm a recovering addict. My name is Sylvia. Hey, family. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized that we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
Thank you, Sylvia. And next I have asked Honesty from Richmond, Virginia, to read a portion of our literature.
I'm an addict named Honesty. That's right, spiritual principle. Start up here. Relationships. Also, our inventories usually include material on relationships. Basic text, page 29. What an understatement this is, especially in later recovery. Entire inventories may focus on our relationships with others. Our lives have been filled with relationships with lovers, friends, parents, co-workers, children, and others with whom we come in contact. A look at these associations can tell us much about our essential character. Often our inventories catalog the resentments that arise from our day-to-day interactions with others. We strive to look at our part in these frictions. Are we placing unrealistic expectations on other people? Do we impose our standards on others? Are we sometimes downright intolerant? Often just the writing of our inventory will release some of the pressure that a troubled relationship can produce. But we must also share this inventory with another human being. That way we get some needed perspective on our part in the problem and how we can work toward a solution. The inventory is a tool that allows us to begin healing our relationships. We learn that today, with the help of an inventory, we can start to enjoy our relationships with others. Just for today, I will inventory the part I play in my relationships. I will seek to play a richer, more responsible part in those relationships. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you, honesty. Okay, and at this time, out of respect, I would like to ask persons to please put your cellular phone on vibrate, please. And if you need to conversate, please go outside of the exit doors. Okay, and at this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, which is John S. from Virginia.
My name is John. I'm an addict. Not to complain, it is past my bedtime, so if I say something unacceptable, please consider the fact that I should be asleep right now. But I do talk in my sleep sometimes, so it wouldn't be unlike me to say something while I was sleeping as well. This is a very exciting topic, I think, especially at a convention after midnight, because I know what some of y'all are thinking, you know, will I have a relationship before the convention's over? How many of y'all really are looking for that special relationship while you're here? Raise your hand, please. I know you're out there. If you were to keep them up for a few minutes, you could see each other and see who was looking, so I can see fear is prevalent in here tonight, so that's probably why you ain't got a relationship right now. In the old days, they used to have buttons looking for a relationship. You'd walk around and you just knew who to go to, but now they make you guess. I don't know why they quit doing that. Worked for me, you know. My clean date's August 10th, 1982. Thank you. That actually was, I think, the day before I went to my first NA meeting. And so far, it's working out good for me. I'm well aware I have a relapse in me, so I don't want to at all come across like I may be out of the woods, because I know I'm not. And I'm going to do everything I can not to use that relapse. I don't think I need that in the bag, you know what I mean? But it's there. In any event, you know, for the last 29-plus years, every relationship I've gotten into, no matter who it's with, has been in recovery while in these rooms. You know, even if they aren't in the rooms, I'm in the rooms. And every relationship I've gotten out of in the last 29-plus years has been while I'm in recovery. And that hasn't always been pretty. You know, things happen. I'm sure you're all well aware of that. That don't go away just because you get clean, by the way. You know, and I've had a little time to think about, you know, stick to the topic. What can I, you know, what are my experiences? And I can say this much. For the most part, every relationship I've gotten into in the last 29-plus years have been pretty damn good, no matter who I'm in them with, whether they're earth people, regular people, sick people, recovering people, dumb people, smart people, you name it. They've been basically pretty good. And anyone I'm not in anymore, I probably didn't need to be in. It's a good thing I ain't in it no more. Whether it be somebody I work for, or they work for me, or whatnot. You know, my relationship with my family's gotten better, with my higher power has gotten better, just society in general, things have gotten good. I'm here to tell you, relationships aren't that big a deal in recovery. We got 12 steps, 12 traditions, a spiritual way of life. If we live our life to the best of our ability in these guidelines, we're going to do pretty good. If you come in here and work a few steps and don't work like step 6 and 7, you're going to struggle with relationships, because it's hard to have a quality relationship and bring a shortcoming to it, because that just, they don't mix well, not for long. And if they do, then you're really sick. You might need outside help. You know, a few years back, when we were relatively new, and I'm going to share several stories, and the reason I'm only really sharing them is because they was on the tape I think I submitted to speak, so I'm guessing somebody wanted to hear that. They thought they was important, so Hashem. The years ago when NA was developing and evolving in the Richmond area, we had several meetings a week. We was on this mission to start, you know, meetings and really get things going good. We had a newcomer show up, and he had some back charges, which meant, you know, he had to go to court and get convicted for selling drugs and go to prison. So about a year leading up to his court case, the fellowship of NA, we surrounded this individual. We really held him up, walked him through this process, and made it so life was bearable and could really watch the quality of his life improve. He really became a useful, productive member of society as a result of the fellowship of NA and us. We gave him a job, gave him a place to live, gave him purpose, went to court with him, helped him get his lawyer, helped him pay for his lawyer. You know, after about a year of being clean, you know, we all testified. He went to prison for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, I forget how long. I took his collect call every single day for 2 years. And we went and visited him on weekends, you know, and we sent him, put money on his books and sent him presents. And then after a couple few years, you know, he comes out of prison, he goes home, and, you know, I'm taking him to a meeting, and he didn't want to come to a meeting. I said, why not? He said, well, I want to go to an AA meeting. I said, fucking AA meeting? What do you mean you want to go to an AA meeting? And I don't cuss, by the way, so you really didn't think you heard that. It's after midnight. There's a midnight rule in here. And I said, why not? He said, well, there ain't no recovery in NA. I said, you've got to be kidding me. All these years, all this stuff we've done for you and helped you become who you are and where you're at and what's going on, you telling me there ain't no recovery in NA? Have you lost your mind? I mean, look around the room here. You can't tell me there ain't no recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. Of course there's recovery here, but he hurt my feelings. We haven't really spoken much in the last 25 years. You know, he still goes to the other A. He's a selfish, self-centered prick. You know, I think I know what he was talking about, though. I finally figured it out. He's a contractor. And back then, I guess the NA people didn't have disposable income and couldn't hire him to do the contracting jobs. I don't know. Maybe they take sympathy on you over in AA and give you jobs or something. I don't know. But I was really offended by that. You know, and over the years, I've met a lot of people in NA. Similar stories. We all have them. You know. You know, the good news is I'm the guilty one, if anything, because I'm staying clean, doing good, you know, working fine for me. You know, my life's gotten better. I can't help whatever other people do. You know, I was a few years clean, and, you know, you hear sometimes don't get involved. I'm going to talk about, for me, it's girls, but, you know, people you want to screw. So don't get involved with people your first year that you want to have sex with, you know, or whatever. I don't know what they really meant. But I know I really chased every girl I really thought would want to be chased or be had. I didn't get the concept, don't get involved. I was a Marine when I got clean, by the way, and that I think we got passes for that. We were supposed to do that. I don't know. It ain't normal. I mean, it ain't different. It's different today. Anyway, that's another story. That ain't the topic. But after a few years clean, I finally got a girlfriend. I fell in love with a girl, man. I mean, this chick was awesome, man. I was several years clean. She was fresh out of rehab. We had a wonderful time for about a month. And I thought, this is what they're talking about, quality relationship. I finally got one, you know, all these years in recovery, and I finally got a girlfriend. It's awesome. I think I'd like to stick around with this girl and spend some time with her. And then, you know, one day she, you know, took me out on the bench and sat me down and said, I'm moving on. I'm going to go hook up with my counselor. You know, I liked him better. And it, like, broke my heart. I mean, it's like, what in the heck? You know, I finally opened my heart and my soul up to somebody, and you dumped me. And it likely killed me. Now, the message in this little piece is this. That almost destroyed me at 3 years clean. I mean, I ended up seeing a therapist, a counselor, want to know what's wrong with me. Why don't these girls like me? Why they dump me? And when I'm thinking, my God, if I was 30 days clean and had them kind of feelings for a girl, I wouldn't be here today. You know, if I was 6 months clean and had that type of gut pain that came on, I mean, I don't see how people can do it. I mean, I see it happening all the time, and I'm certainly guilty and have done it, but I needed several years clean before I could even remotely begin to deal with those emotions that it takes to have a relationship with another human being. And I'm talking to one where you actually have a quality life together. Now, a little sidebar from that little relationship is that years later, like 25 years later, this lady's stepdaughter comes into Narcotics Anonymous, who happens to work for the foundation I run, who happened to be the one that read tonight, Honesty. That was her stepmother. But I had no idea 25 years later we'd end up in the same fellowship together. So not that it would have mattered. But, you know, after I was like 5 years clean, I finally met a girl that was the one. This is my story, you know. And I remember what really accelerated this opportunity was maybe 6 months earlier, I realized if I stopped smoking cigarettes, all of a sudden I could double my playing field with the ladies because, you know, non-smoking women don't want to date smokers. And so a little tip for you guys, if you want to, you know, broaden your horizons, quit smoking. And then all of a sudden it's all available. But anyway, that's just a little tip for relationships. Not so good if you go back to smoking and with you a non-smoker, though. That sucks. You don't want to do that. Creates a whole new set of problems. But I met a girl in NA. She was clean. I was clean 5 years. She was clean 3 years, I think. We dated a little bit. We fell in love. We got married. And, I mean, life was wonderful. You know, we, had a, you know, really a good relationship. We were both going to meetings, had service work. We did everything people suggested us do. A few years into the marriage, we had a child. My life was going awesome. You know, little time goes by. Don't quiz me on the exact time frame and the years and whatnot. You know, all I know is she came home one night and, you know, we were married 6 years. I guess I must have had 10, 11 years at the time. She just came home one night and said, John, I don't love you. Don't want to be married. I'm leaving you. And this is what it's going to cost you. And it really messed me up. I mean, that likely killed me. I mean, because all these years in recovery, I did everything I was basically supposed to do with some, you know, exception. And, you know, all of a sudden, man, I get hammered with this major trauma. And it wasn't funny. You know, I cried like a baby for a couple of weeks. I begged this woman, don't leave me, don't do this. Let's see a counselor, a therapist, a preacher, anybody. You know, this can't be happening, you know. And then it dawned on me, weren't you talking to your sponsor about this or your home group or whatever, you know. What kind of program you worked in, you know, because I shared about everything. It wouldn't cross my mind to contemplate dumping somebody and not talk about it. You know, you just don't walk in and one day and bam, you're gone. That don't calculate for me. And for about a year, every single day, all I could think about, I never thought about using drugs. Not once did it cross my mind to use. But I don't think an hour a day went by. I didn't think of killing that bitch, you know. It was like the homicidal thoughts were strong. And you know, I got a 19-year-old daughter by this woman that likes to listen to my tapes, too. So in case she ever hears this, you know, we have to embellish a little bit, I guess, but not much. But then I thought about killing myself. I mean, it was the stuff that goes through my brain and people I sponsor's brain and other people's brains. When we go through these traumatic experiences like this, It's terrible pain, you know. It's weird how the greatest joys of your life is going to come from a relationship, But yet the most miserable pain may come from that very relationship at some point in time. It's just incomprehensible at times. Any event, as time goes by, it's just the fellowship saved my life. You know, for years I still have a good reputation for trying to help folks, make a difference in people's lives. But I was really powerless in an extra special way. And these people surrounded me, they made me stay clean, took me to meetings, you know, made sure I got my needs met. You know, we worked through this period. I had no idea why God would, you know, let this happen to me. You know, it's funny, when a door closes, if you be patient, the window's going to open sooner or later. And you got to realize, you know, now looking back, you know, at 29 years clean, you can certainly see why things can happen, or you don't want to question them so bad. But damn, when you're going through them, it's like the end of the world, you know. But the solution has always been, you got to talk about it. You got to share about it. You got to stay spiritual. You got to, you know, work steps around it. And I'm going to tell you something, too. This is interesting. You need to know this. Whatever you do in these rooms, people are watching you. And most important, newcomers are watching you. They want to see how you're going to handle this stuff. And I think people are curious, you know, because the truth is, according to statistics, over half the people are going to get married and divorced. So if you stay in recovery long enough, you're going to go through this. And I don't know if we have a higher rate or a lower rate. I've never been able to quite figure that out. You know, we got long-term relationships in these rooms, but it seems to me we go through a lot more than maybe regular people. But I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But I do know this. You stay clean long enough, you're going to experience this probably. It's a 50-50 chance you're going to go through this. Well, I'm here to tell you, A, you don't have to use over it. B, if you choose a recovery lifestyle and you let people love you and help you, you'll probably get through it okay. You know, a few years after this, as time went by, you know, I fell in love with another woman. You know, God put somebody else in my life, another newcomer, you know, God be it, you know. And it's weird. This lady had 6 years clean, and I met her like a couple of weeks after my wife dumped me. And then I met her briefly for a minute, and I met her a year later, and I thought she still had all that clean time, you know. So I took the liberty to fall in love with her quickly at a convention. We met in Myrtle Beach. And I fall in love with this girl. And I'm almost divorced, but not quite. But before the convention's over, she tells me she had a relapse, you know. And I really didn't pay no attention to that, you know. Just, fucking relapse. Not bothering me none. You okay with it, you know. But what I didn't realize, there's a difference between a relapse and in full-blown relapse, you know, and I found out the difference, you know. For the next year, we're in this relationship. I live in Richmond. She lives in Washington, and we only seen each other a couple few days a week at best. And I might come up there, and she's, like, passed out, you know. And I know I'm smelling alcohol, but she's telling me it's garlic, so I'm believing her. Okay, it's garlic. You know, when they passed out like that, the sex really ain't that bad, you know. So, and, actually, my wife kept asking me, what are you going to talk about? What are you going to talk about? You know, she's the type that whenever you share, she writes it all out and goes over it and types it and prints it and goes over it again and spell checks it and, you know, and me, I don't never prepare for anything. I mean, we're complete opposite. So, well, I, you know, didn't have, really have to bring that up, but, you know, she's in the audience, you know, she's awesome woman. Times have changed. The good news is we've been married, I think, 14 years almost, I think. Yeah, 14 years. And she's been clean 14 years or whatever it is. I mean, it, you know, she's been clean all that time. I take full credit for saving her life, of course. She'd have probably died if I hadn't come along. But what I didn't realize is, you know, I had a great charm life with that other wife. I was very active in NA, very active in the recovering community, put a lot of time and energy and effort into developing recovery in our community, not just at NA, but in like recovering housing and Oxford houses and things in general. And then I had sponsors, and I was a self-made man. You know, I went from zero to a lot and did really well. And sponsors would call me. I've joined a country club. They call me on the club. In the old days when you had bag phones, I didn't like them bothering me on a golf course, you know. So it's weird. You know, God had a way of taking away things from me that were interfering with my carrying the message. At the time, I didn't know that, though, you know. But now I look back now, I know exactly what he had in mind. 5 minutes. Well, fast forward, my current wife, Carol, she's in the addiction business nationwide. She's actually a lobbyist in Washington, a lobbyist for the addiction industry, in a good way, not a bad way. So I was able to go around with her all over the country and further my involvement in the recovery delivery system, as you would say. You know, I got to, like, one of her clients was Betty Ford, and we got to meet her and become friends with her for years before she passed away. And then to be invited to her funeral, that's a pretty cool thing, you know. Not many addicts in NA, I don't think, got invited to that, you know. But we were invited because of the quality and the level of the relationship. And we would go, you know, we're going to Wales next week to be in the first recovery walk in the country of Wales, you know, to help promote recovery over in Wales. So the point is, my recovery has gone to levels and heights I never dreamed or knew it could get to. And I'm just so excited about the possibilities for the future. You know, we started a recovery center in Richmond, and I get to talk to newcomers every single day for a living. We got 35 beds. Most of them are indigent, so don't think we're getting rich, you know. But I just love what I get to share with them. We get to go to jails, and a lot of the sheriffs in the local jail, they love us, so they want us in their jail to help them with their problem. You know, we get to work with the criminal justice system. The Virginia General Assembly, for the last 3 years, I was the only addict in the history to ever sit on a substance abuse subcommittee, a joint Senate and House subcommittee for substance abuse. And I got this reputation as like this bulldozer, pit bull. When I go down to the Capitol, all the delegates and senators, they know what I'm getting ready to come at them and talk to them about, so they kind of go the other way. Like when the governor ran for governor, he loved me. He was my best friend. But when he got elected, now all of a sudden I'm asking him to pony up on his promises. He don't want nothing to do with me now. So I'm learning how politics work, you know. But the point is, the relationships, they get better and better and better. And I pray regularly. You know, I work a good 11 step, and I want to make sure everything I do, I'm walking in concert with the God of my understanding and his will for me and the power to carry it out. Now, I'm sure we're running low on time, and I do love to share, and I could stand up here for hours, but it is late, and Kathy from Texas will certainly have a far greater message to carry than myself, I'm sure. But all I know is if you're new, don't use no matter what. Keep coming back, because it gets better, and it gets like you never dreamed it could get. And then some. So you just get excited if you're new. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, John. And next we have asked Kathy from Texas to come and share with us.
Hello, my name's Kathy, and I'm an addict. And I want to thank the committee that asked me to come speak. I'm very honored. you know, when they gave me the topic, beginning and ending relationships in the rooms, I don't consider myself an expert, but I've learned a few things about relationships since I've been in recovery. Let me start out by saying that I believe one of the common themes that I've noticed throughout my experience is that addicts have relationship problems. That, you know, we didn't get the manual. You know, we didn't get the book. You know, for me, the people that raised me didn't have the concept down in their own right. And so they didn't have a lot to share with me. And so, you know, before I got into recovery, relationships were all about whoever was nice to me and whoever wanted me. Unless they're like really gross or something. You know, if they bathed and they were nice to me and they wanted me, okay. So I didn't have a lot of criteria. And of course I needed a social lubricant to be social, you know. And so that was the path. I met my first husband in a club, and I moved in with him a couple weeks later, and we were married a couple months later, and the relationship lasted 11 years. We cling. We make it work. And what happened? I got clean. And I realized that really we only had one thing in common. And that one thing was changing for me. So that was the end of that relationship, you know. And, you know, I was in a lot of fear. I was in a lot of fear that the only reason we were still in that relationship, you know, it got kind of ugly toward the end. It got real ugly toward the end. And I was in some fear that the only reason we were in that relationship was because I was paying, you know, his credit card bills and the rent and the whatever. So I cut him off. And he said goodbye. And so my fear came true, you know. But today I know that water seeks its own level. That's my little saying when it comes to relationships. So I didn't really have anything to offer. So the individual that I attracted didn't have anything to offer, you know. So I wasn't capable of love. And it's funny, too, because we always think, well, you know, I keep falling for these guys that are emotionally unavailable. And the bottom line is I was emotionally unavailable. You know, I didn't want to open up because I had abandonment issues. You know, I feel like singing to the choir. I had abandonment issues and rejection issues, you know. My parents were divorced early. My mother was, you know, I judge codependent. You know, she went along to get along. She spent her days hunting my stepdad down at the bars, you know, hunting for my stepdad. So I didn't have any relationship skills. I didn't really even like people by the time I got, you know, I was ready to get clean. You know, my only coping skill that I had was getting high. That was my toolbox had one tool in it, you know, for life. I could keep a checkbook. I could keep a job. I showed up. I was functional. I had credit when I came in. But I didn't really like people. I wasn't really, you know, I was, in fact, it was funny because people would say how angry I was. And I didn't own that because I was raised to believe that it wasn't okay. You know, you weren't supposed to be angry. You know, that angry was bad. And so it wasn't allowed. So I just wasn't. You know, I was frustrated and, you know, maybe even pissed off. I'd get close to angry, but angry was not okay. So I wasn't angry. But so I came into the rooms and they told me that first you need to get a relationship with the higher power. And so that was really the beginning. That was the first beginning relationship that I had. And, you know, and then you get a relationship with yourself. And then you get a relationship with some friends, you know, girlfriends, same-sex friends. And then maybe you will be able to get in a relationship with someone that's, we say romances and finances can take us out. Because I didn't have a lot of experience in opening my heart to people and setting boundaries. You know, I have a disease of extremes. It's all on or it's all off. You know, I didn't sever relationships, I ran. You know, I jumped in with both feet, and then I ran with both feet when things got a little shaky. You know, that I didn't have any experience. That's why it's so dangerous. So I began to, and what I learned too is the reason I go and try to create a relationship with the higher power before I try to create a relationship with myself is I had no experience. I didn't know anything about love. And that's something I get from a higher power. You know, I began to believe that there was something greater than myself that really cared about me. You know, a personal higher power. You know, I share my higher power today, but initially it was all me and all mine. Self-centeredness is the core of my disease, and I wanted my own higher power because I needed that. And so that's what began to show me, you know, what love could be. You know, and I began to stay clean. I began to work the steps. I began to get to know myself. I began to have a relationship with myself. You know, and I realized that all the people that I had blamed for my situation or poor me or whatever, you know, it's a big victim art or whatever, that I did it to myself too. That I had nobody to blame after I became an adult and moved out. I could, you know, whatever my parents may or may not, you know, whatever their shortcoming or how they fell short as parents, that was 10 years, 13 years, 15 years ago. And I was still doing it to me. I was still putting myself on the back burner. I didn't take care of myself, really. I wasn't healthy. I mean, you know, if I'm poisoning myself on a daily basis, you know what I mean? I'm committing suicide on a daily basis. I can no longer throw stones at my caregivers. You know, of course, it never occurred to me to ask anyone, you know, it says in our text about, you know, asking somebody how they did it. You know, it never occurred to me to ask somebody who looked happy, you know, what do you do in your life to be so happy? You know, part of it was shame. I was an adult. You know, I got clean at 33. I was an adult, and I didn't know the first thing about having relationships. I didn't know the first thing about living clean. I didn't have, you know, I was just embarrassed, you know, and ashamed. That's just who I was at the time. And so I come in, and I start to build that relationship with higher power. I said, why not believe that something gives a shit about me? You know, why not believe that somebody loves me just for me, just for who I am, not because what I can do? You know, I got to hang up with that, you know, what I can do. I've got to earn. You know, I always felt I had to earn my love. And so, and then I begin to get a relationship with me, and I know that I'm not good or bad or all good or all bad, because I think that's how it is. You know, when I worked at 6th and 7th step, you know, I didn't want to look at my defects of character because it was like, okay, I'm all bad. I'm a piece of shit. Just, you know, hang me. So as I began to work the steps and I began to get friendships with women, I never had an issue with women. You know, a lot of women felt like somebody tried to take their man or whatever. You know, I never had any of those problems because I didn't trust anybody. It wasn't because you did anything to me, because I never got that close to somebody. You know, so nobody really messed me over. And if I was in a relationship and the guy I was in a relationship ran off with you, I wasn't mad at you. You know, you didn't make a commitment to me. The guy's the one I was in a relationship with. That's the person that betrayed me. I don't consider it your fault, you know. So I didn't really have an issue with that. And I was real fortunate because they told me, and I tell you what, I came in with the gift of desperation. You know, when I came in, I surrendered. I would never have, you know, I didn't try a whole bunch of stuff. That's not my story. I didn't go to jail. I didn't go to treatment. I didn't do any of that. You know, I realized I needed to quit getting high because I needed to pass a drug test. And they told me in A is I could do that there. And there I went. And when I got there, they told me, you know, to get a sponsor and work the steps and get involved in service. You know, they told me these things to do. Go to meetings every day, get a sponsor, work the steps, you know. And all I could think of is, you know, I've thrown my life away. You know, time's a-wasting. You know, get with the program. I gave it. I said, I'll give it a year. And if things aren't better, I'll go find something else. You know what I mean? I really just came here to get clean. And then I found out that, you know, the 12 steps are the solution for living. You know, which is good because I'm cheap. I really wouldn't want to spend a lot of money on a counselor or anything. I'd rather put my, you know, $5 in the basket than my $100 in the counselor, whatever. So then I they told me don't make any major changes. They didn't say don't get in a relationship. They said don't make any major changes for a year. And I was in a relationship when I came in, but it was not a healthy relationship. And I was getting clean and they weren't, and things were getting rough. You know, when you're high, knock down, drag out, scream your lungs off, get in your face and making threats and, you know, that's not such a big deal. But when you're clean, the knife threats and the I'm gonna, you know, the iron casket. See, my defense was always the iron cast skillet. Because it's always on the stove. I'm from Texas. At the time, we always had the iron cast skillet on the stove, you know, ready for the chicken fried steak or whatever. And it's a good weapon. I mean, it's heavy. You know what I mean? So it's like, you threaten me, skillet, you know. Skillet upside your head. So, but you know, it lost its luster. When I became clean, my life became worth something to me. And I really didn't want to get into a, you know, iron cast skillet, knockdown, drag out with this person that's messed up and obviously doesn't care a lot about their life. And so so that relationship ended. And so they're saying no major changes. A lot of people translate that to no relationships. But I wasn't capable of getting into a relationship with anyone until I had a relationship with a higher power, until I had a relationship with me. Otherwise, I'm just bringing in the baggage that I just picked up on the way outside that other relationship. And I also knew I didn't want to walk into a meeting and look around and realize I'd fucked every guy in the room. You know, I didn't have to do that or do half of that or a quarter of that to realize that that was my lifeline. That's my life. You know, my home group is my home. I mean, that is my life. It's pissed off and it's, they ain't doing things right or whatever. You know what I mean? I know they don't. They're all screwed up or whatever. In the end, I need them more than they need me. And so who's going to get with the program? You know what I mean? Just about anything, you know, unless we're like breaking traditions or whatever. You know, I'm the one that needs to get right. You know, the collective is doing God's will. I mean, you know, if it's that bad and it's me or them, I go or you go, it's probably going to be me go. So, and then I'll just have to, you know, save my ass, not my face. So that's my home. And I didn't want to, you know, shit my own front yard is what we say. <You know? laughs> I might grow across town and play or something. You know, that's the thing, right? We go to the other fellowship. We can burn the bridge over there, but don't burn it in your own backyard, right? So, But, you know, but I did. I hunted around. I got involved with a guy who had like 9 months clean. I had, I don't know, maybe a year, a little over a year. And, but he was young and he wanted me. You know, that was the compromise. And we were supposed to meet like at a 10 o'clock meeting and he didn't show up and I thought I was going to die. You know, it's like, you've left me and our 8 children, right? So, you know, what I learned about myself was, you know, he didn't think nothing of it, right? Who knows? I don't know what his deal was. He ain't around anymore. But the point is, that wasn't working for me. I wasn't ready. You know, I wasn't ready to be in, you know, the casual. I don't do friends with benefits stuff. That's not my story. I'm not there. You know, I'm all or nothing. And so when I commit all the way. And so I need to be sure I'm in a relationship with somebody who has some integrity. And so what I did is I began to make a list of the things. And that's what I asked sponsees to do today. You know, try to separate yourself from the individual that you have in mind and make a list of what you want in a relationship. You know, don't build it around this person because, you know, it's not a trick. It's, you know, write down what you want in a relationship. You know, what do you think a relationship is supposed to be about? What do you think is there? And then look at the individual that you might be interested in and how do they measure up to that? Because some things I'm going to have to compromise on. You know, I mean, it'd be nice to get everything I want in a relationship, but there's some things I don't compromise on. That's the important thing. What are you not willing to compromise on? Like honesty. You know, honesty and integrity. I want to be able to trust the individual to be honest with me. I'm not really a jealous person. But I don't want to have to worry about somebody. You know what I mean? I found that if I trust my gut, I have a good sense of intuition today. And if I trust it, it kind of tells me what's going on. So I don't like having to deal with questioning everybody's motive and what they're telling me and stuff, right? So honesty is a really big deal. You know, integrity. Somebody who walks the walk. You know, I had this crush on this guy and he was all, you know, roses by moonlight, you know, walking along the lake and, you know, I guess quoting poetry or something, you know. And I hadn't seen him in a while. A bunch of us were out to coffee and he was talking about he was getting it. He had gotten it from some newcomer chick, you know. I was like, does that really reconcile with the poetry and the roses and the walks by the lake that you're getting some, you know? So what I learned from that, you know, we always hear, judge people by their actions, not their words. It was one of those light bulbs, you know, one of those moments where it's like, you know, I've been listening to this guy talk the talk, but now I see that his actions are quite a bit different. So to me, he didn't have a lot of integrity. You know, and he obviously didn't value this intimate relationship, for lack of a better term. Apparently it wasn't very intimate with him. You know, he's getting it or getting some or whatever. But the point is did I want to be the person he was getting some from? No, that's not exactly how I want my relationship with another individual to be described. So that's something, you know, I learned to judge people by their actions and not their words. And so, I'm really bad with time. So I guess it's been about 3 or 4 years since I got my divorce. And I got married in the rooms. I had 3 years. He had about 1.5 years clean. I actually went and asked other men in the program, people whose opinion I valued, what their feeling about this individual was. You know, what kind of guy do you think he is? Because people, especially guys, tend to show their real selves with other guys. You know, they may be real nice to you, and then they're doing the locker room thing. And so I needed to know if this man had integrity with other men. And so I asked some friends of mine that I trusted their relationship, and they were long-term friends. And they told me that, you know, he was a good guy, stand-up guy. So, you know, we'd been going out to coffee and stuff, so I started dating him. And we ended up, you know, to me, I mean, a couple months, you know, it's a big step for me, you know. So anyway, held out for a couple months or whatever. So, like I say, that's why I do the work up front, so I'll know before I, because once I go, I fall. So anyway, so, but we were together for about 8 years. And, or 10 years, something like that. You know, we got married in 2000 and we'd already been together. He's a great guy. But things were not working with us, you know. I was working his program and mine, you know, that's a little burden. But, you know, it kind of become toxic. I wasn't happy. I was coming home and I'm not that easy to live with. I realize that. You know, but it's funny because communication was really important at the beginning of the relationship. And at this point in the relationship, they just didn't want to talk about it. You know, it's one of those, we need to, no, I don't want to talk about it, you know. So if you can't communicate, it can really be a relationship killer, you know. So, but the thing was is, I didn't want it to be like the other relationship. I didn't want to hang on till we had claw marks, right? I didn't want to keep going until it became so toxic I never wanted to see the man again. Because really, I love the individual. I love this man. But I can't live with this man. You know, so that's the bottom line. So we were in an argument one night, and he said something. And I'd already thought about it, because I don't like to make rash. I don't like to threaten. You know, it's like somebody threatening your job. That's not right. Well, okay, fine then. I'll just leave. You know what I mean? Every 5 minutes. Okay, you know, when he leaving? You want me to pack your bags? You know, what's the deal? So I don't do that. You know, I'd already talked to my sponsor. I'd been processing it for a few months. And, you know, because there's logistics. Anyway, his dad passed away, and he came into some money right about this time. And so we got in an argument, or actually I think we'd already made the decision, and then that just kind of fell into place. But anyway, we were having an argument, and he was like, well, maybe we ought to just get a divorce. And I was like, well, you know what? Now that you mentioned it, I kind of been leaning toward that, but maybe that would be a good idea, you know, maybe that would be a good idea. And so, yeah, dad passed away and things worked out. And the neat thing is really that's my most successful relationship because we're best friends. You know, the man's watering my yard and taking care of my dog while I'm in San Diego, you know, on vacation for 2 weeks. So, but Narcotics Anonymous gave me that. Really. Narcotics Anonymous gave me every relationship. You know, work. You know, I haven't, you know, I've been at this job longer than I've been at any job ever. And part of it is because what I do see is I go off and I go off sideways and then I feel bad and then it just starts a snowball effect. There's no way but out. You know, there's just no way of getting out of it, but to get out of it. So, but thanks to the steps, the 12 steps, and the people in the room who love me through business meetings and love me through a lot of service commitments where I learn to try to be more human. You know, I learned that really it's that I'm not the only person on the face of the earth and that, you know, my intentions will only carry me so far. And at some point, I've got to put some actions behind the intentions and, you know, maybe learn to love myself and learn to love others and play nice in the sandbox. And so, and it's an ongoing process, and I'm still new in the process, and I really appreciate you guys being here this at this late hour to help me with the process. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lord. Okay, and yes, we do want to thank John and Kathy again. However, I have asked for Carolyn S. to come up and read We Do Recover.
Good morning, family. My name's Carolyn, and I am a blessed recovering addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institution, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proven itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to all of us. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. Woo! Good night.
Okay, and we are going to ask that we close together in a circle with the Serenity Prayer.